This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. We'll begin today with a number of developments in the various investigations surrounding the Boston Marathon bombings. The Los Angeles Times reports that the gun used by Tamerlan Tsarnaev, one of the accused bombers on the night of the Watertown shootout, was traced by police to a gang that sold crack cocaine in Portland, Maine. The LA Times also reports that authorities believe Tsarnaev's ties to Maine drug dealers helped finance his trips to Russia, where he was allegedly radicalized.
Meanwhile, a front-page story in today's Boston Globe reveals more about the shooting of Ibrahim Tadashev last year in Florida. Tadashev was an alleged friend of Tsarnaev's and under investigation for a grisly triple homicide in Waltham that may have involved Tsarnaev as well. Tadashev was under questioning in his Orlando home when he was shot and killed by an agent from the Boston FBI field office. The Globe today revealed that agent's name. Maria Sacchetti reported the story for the Globe and joins us now. Maria, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having us.
So first of all, the Globe reports that the agent's name is Aaron McFarlane. How did you learn of his identity, and why hadn't his name been made public before?
Well, we learned of his identity in the report that was released in March from Florida, clearing the agent in the shooting. They said he shot Tadashev in self-defense and to protect the Massachusetts state trooper from an attack by Tadashev. But we wanted to verify it, and that took a long time. And we also wanted to look into the allegations beyond what had been reported briefly back in that time of his testimony in a trial in Oakland. And so we requested the transcripts of his testimony. We looked into his background. We dug into public records so that we could verify him for our readers. And that took a long time. I mean, several weeks until we were able to finally publish today.
Right. So you went through a verification process after finding his name in what the Globe was citing as improperly redacted documents that had been released by a Florida office, right?
Right. And typically Florida, you know, after an investigation, we're told that typically Florida releases the names of officers involved in shootings. And that's so that the public has, you know, faith in the people who, you know, we entrust to protect us and to carry guns, you know, paid for by the public so that they can do their police work. And I think, you know, a lot of people feel that transparency is important so that, you know, people understand what happened, who was involved, and so that we can believe, you know, the chain of events.
Right. So you mentioned Oakland, California, because that's where the name of Aaron McFarlane led you to. What was he doing in Oakland before he became an FBI officer in the Boston office?
So in Oakland, he was a police officer starting in the year 2000, and he left in 2004. He was 31 when he retired, according to court records, for medical reasons. And he's been collecting a pension that is now $52,000 a year for life.
He retired but left on disability. That's where the pension comes from?
That's our understanding. I mean, we know from the state that he retired and from court records that it was for medical reasons. He had injured his leg.
Okay.
So he retired pretty young.
Age of 31, and then went on to work for the FBI, which we'll talk about in a second. But while in the Oakland Police Department, you report that he had been involved or allegedly involved in acts of brutality, or he was accused of police brutality at least a couple of times.
Right. He was named in two lawsuits. Both were settled, and in those, he did not accept any responsibility, and he denied brutalizing anyone. But the allegations were that he and another officer had beaten two people, and then the city did pay them. They paid them a total of more than $30,000. And the union has said that there were a lot of frivolous lawsuits. Oakland was and still is a very troubled and understaffed police department in one of the most dangerous cities in America. the union will say there are a lot of lawsuits filed, but you know, there are also these allegations brought, and the city did settle. And at least, you know, one of the plaintiffs was a convicted drug dealer, you know, who, you know, you would think would have a credibility problem. And what his lawyer made the point that have to give him money. You know, they could have brought that to trial and perhaps won, but they didn't. They settled it with him too.
Mm. And you also report that Oakland is, you know, roughly twice the size of Boston, but with half the number of police officers. And someone that you quoted in the story said that's one of the reasons why it's actually an excellent training ground for law enforcement officials to go on to other positions, such as the FBI. Did you find out if there was any indication if the FBI knew about McFarland's background in Oakland, you know, specifically the allegations against him when they hired him?
Well, just to clarify, Oakland's smaller than Boston, but it has twice the homicide.
Twice the homicide rate. Yeah. That's right. Thanks for the clarification.
No, that's fine. I mean, but the crime rate is striking in Oakland, and it is extremely dangerous to work there as a police officer, and they don't have enough police officers, according to the union. I mean, it's really, the numbers are pretty amazing. But my understanding is that the FBI would not tell us about him. They would not tell us his discipline record. If there was one, they would not tell us if he had been involved in past shootings. He had not been in Oakland. So they have not told us really anything about him. But my understanding is the FBI has a very thorough background check. And so a lot of folks have said, you know, they would be surprised if the FBI did not know about his background in Oakland.
Mm. Now, in the course of your investigation and the reporting that you did on McFarland once his name was found, did you find anything that would cast doubt on the investigations that authorities conducted regarding the death of Ibrahim Tadashev in Florida?
Well, see, these are the questions. The investigation into the shooting was very narrowly focused on whether the shooting was justified. And what civil liberties and other groups have told us their concern is beyond that. In Todeshev's family is whether this could have been prevented. I mean, he was a key figure in the Boston Marathon bombings investigation and the Walther murders, which are still, you know, the murders are still unsolved. He's someone the FBI considered so crucial that they surveilled him by air and land. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, he was an important figure to them. And there are a lot of questions about the decisions that were made and not just that night, but leading up to, you know, deciding to interview him in his house, you know, a place that was far more familiar to him, a person considered very dangerous than you know, any of the people and, you know, any of the agent or the troopers.
Right.
And so there are just a lot of questions. And why was this particular agent sent? You know, who was in charge in the room? Who was making the decisions to, you know, to keep three officers in the room or to allow one to leave?
And I'm sorry to interrupt, Maria, but we're running out of time. And I do want to ask you just briefly one question, because I know that the FBI has said it didn't want to release this particular name because out of concern for the agent's safety. Was there any debate about the Globe's decision within your newsroom about whether or not to do this?
Well, I mean, I think we definitely discuss all those things, and we also, you know, called the FBI about it. We called people and asked, you know, people about this, and we want to make sure we hear everybody out and look at this very carefully. But given the situation and given the past, you know, this is an FBI agent who could be a witness in future, you know, in future cases. His credibility is important. We felt the public needed to know this information.
Well, Maria Sacchetti reported today's story for the Boston Globe. There's a link to her reporting at our website, radioboston.org. Maria, many thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
And stay with us. Coming up this weekend marks 10 years since the first gay marriage licenses were issued in Massachusetts. We'll hear from the couple who was first in line on that historic day. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.